From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Coming up this week, after the school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut, Governor Cuomo says federal gun laws need to be stronger and loopholes need to be closed in a state assault weapon ban. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on the changing leadership coalition in the state Senate. Governor Cuomo signs legislation to create an agency to better protect New Yorkers with disabilities. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Cuomo says federal gun laws need to be strengthened to prevent more shootings like the one in Newtown, Connecticut. But he says New York State's assault weapons ban has loopholes that need to be closed. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Governor Cuomo, who says the Newtown shooting is every parent's worst nightmare, says the state already has some of the toughest anti-gun laws in the nation, so the focus should really be on the strengthening of federal laws.
You can buy a gun in another state and drive several miles, and that's that. So I think there's no doubt but that a federal reform would be the most effective vehicle here.
The federal ban on assault weapons was allowed to lapse in 2004. New York State has an anti-assault weapons law on the books, but Cuomo says it's outdated and needs to be tightened up. For instance, the semi-automatic weapon used in the Newtown shootings is legal in New York. Cuomo says the list of weapons and magazine cartridges banned under the law have not been updated since 1994.
There's no doubt that our assault weapon ban, our assault weapon law, has significant flaws and significant loopholes.
The governor says he does not plan to add anti-gun measures to his litmus test of issues he released several days ago and wants the new Senate governing coalition to accomplish. The coalition includes all of the Senate's Republicans who have traditionally not been as receptive to gun control. The governor did leave open the possibility that he could add some proposals to his State of the State message in January. Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver, a Democrat, agrees that the state's assault weapons ban needs to be modernized to account for new types of weapons and ammunition.
I hate to use the tragedy in this fashion, but the reality is it's reality. We have to stop the proliferance of guns, the availability of guns.
Speaker Silver says he intends to push the new coalition of around 30 Republicans and 5 Democrats in the Independent Democratic Conference in the Senate to adopt bills like child safety locks for guns and micro-stamping of bullets to better investigate criminal shootings.
We've passed the bills that we listed various times only to find, no reception in the Senate till now. I would hope that the tragedy lives on for something positive, and that would be the passage of some bills that would restrict the use of guns in New York.
In a statement after the Newtown shooting on Friday, IDC leader Senator Jeff Klein said we must continue to reevaluate the place of guns in our state and our society. Senate Republican leader Dean Skelos, who will jointly lead the new Senate governing coalition with Senator Klein, says he's interested in pursuing measures to curb illegal gun use by increasing penalties and enacting mandatory minimum sentences. Skelos says most gun crimes are committed by people illegally possessing guns. Assemblyman Kareem Camara, chair of the legislature's Black, Puerto Rican, Hispanic, and Asian caucus, says approving stricter gun laws in New York can set an example for the rest of the nation.
New York State, as the governor has said, being the progressive capital in our country, then we can pass laws that can both have an impact and symbolically send a message to the rest of the country.
Governor Cuomo says there are other steps that need to be taken as well in response to the recent spate of mass shootings. He says the mental health system needs to be reexamined to determine whether people are being adequately protected. And he says society needs to address the current propensity for violence. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, obviously, after the Connecticut shooting, the ripple effect has come into New York. We are hearing, although we don't know if it's true or not, we're speaking on a Thursday morning, that there's a possibility of a pre-Christmas special session in New York so Governor Cuomo can move forward on the gun control issue. Whether or not it appears he will make a move coming in the new session, what do you think?
Well, first of all, he will. And second of all, I will be there to say hooray for the governor if he does this. I don't care what political motives anybody has if good things can get done. And I do believe that this is an opportunity for this governor to really make a mark. Are you going to get rid of 300 million guns in the United States? No. Is it a good idea that the federal government handles this so that guns which are constantly crossing state lines can be, you know, mitigated? The answer is yes, it should be federal. But every state and every human being ought to be in on this. You know, David, we've had this terrible controversy. People can't sleep as a result of it. People are in tears as a result of it. But the one thing that could come away from this is a meaningful response to this tragedy. When you have the great triangle shirtwaist fire, you got new fire laws. You've had this stranglehold on American politics by the National Rifle Association for years. And why? Well, it's their job, and they represent, but they've always gone too far. They've never quite understood what balance was all about. So if you make some changes, if you say, for example, that guns should be registered, if you make it harder for people who have issues to get guns, that's good. If you put imprints on guns and on bullets so that you can trace where they came from, that's good. If you ban assault rifles, what in hell does any human being need with an assault rifle? What, you're going to go hunting Bambi with an assault rifle? You know, this is just insane. So all of those things have to be done. Obviously, the governor is thinking that this is a good time to do it. And a lot of politicians are coming out of previous shells and saying, you know, we're going to do the right thing. Now, some people are making mistakes. We're going forward here. For Michael Bloomberg to hate guns is correct. For him to attack the president of the United States for not having done enough up to now is silliness. The thing to do now is to be supportive and to make sure that we're all in this together and that we're going to do the right thing. I know Obama will. I know Cuomo will. Good for them.
Obviously, if legislation is to be passed in New York to close loopholes, for example, on assault rifles, the governor will have to work with the assembly leadership and the Senate, where we see a newly elected Democratic leader, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, and this coalition that has formed. Will that coalition make any meaningful moves in this area, you think?
Well, I know that I'm considered to be the political analyst here, but the answer is I don't know. I mean, I think that the assembly is clear. They'll do the right thing. You know, you Democrats, they're used to this incredible mayhem when you have urban violence and guns and the rest of it. They'll do the right thing. Shelley Silver is a brilliant man, and he knows that this is a good time to do it, I'm sure. The Senate is anybody's guess. We have this insane sort of setup of co-leadership between Jeff Klein, who is, let's just put it kindly, a pragmatic politician who saw his opportunity and he took it, and Dean Skelos, who's desperate to stay in power despite the fact that more Democrats were elected than Republicans. And so he made a deal with a couple of Democrats. There's an underlayment here of some racial politics, which we've gone into before, but we don't have to now, but only to say that this is an experiment, 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, who's going to be the president of the Senate, who's going to be the head man, that really can't be sustained. So I'm thinking that if Cuomo wants to negotiate with him, he'll have a lot to go for. Look, let's face it. Had Cuomo done what he said he was going to do and vetoed the reapportionment bill, the Democrats would be in power right now. No two ways about it. But instead, he didn't. A lot of people think that's because he's friendly with the Republicans, more friendly than the Democrats in the Senate. Is it going to happen that Cuomo will have chits out to both the Republicans who are there because, you know, of his actions, or to Klein, who is also, we suspect, on a first-name basis with the governor? Then, if that is the case, he'll get what he wants.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo signed legislation this week to create a new state agency he says will better protect about a million New Yorkers with disabilities and special needs under state-funded care. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The law will establish a new special prosecutor and inspector general with more than 400 staff to oversee six state agencies and their contractors. It will establish a single point for reporting and screening abuse allegations for those in residential care and day programs. The agency will have a hotline, statewide incident database, and a list of employees banned from working with the disabled because of abusive behavior. Michael Carey, whose autistic son Jonathan died in state care, cautions the agency will perpetuate abuse and cover-ups because the law does not create true independent oversight of the system.
The governor's negating the fact that innocent, disabled, vulnerable children and adults in massive numbers are being harmed on a daily basis, and it's being protected and shielded and covered up, and for the most part, by state agencies that are directly under his authority.
Carey brands the new legislation a fraudulent bill.
It fails to provide an environment for the disabled in New York State free from abuse and neglect.
Carey says he is speaking out because of the massacre in Connecticut. He believes the governor chooses to bask in the media glow from gun control and Hurricane Sandy rather than responsibly address people with special needs.
He's taking certain things to use towards political advantage. That's what he's doing.
The governor's office did not return calls for comment. Michael Carey believes that New York State profits from putting disabled people in out-of-home care.
We were putting our son into OD. Heck, my God, they were billing over the time somewhere between $3,500 and $3,800 per day for Jonathan being there. And they were shifting most of the money that was supposed to be for Jonathan's care and being billed Medicaid for Jonathan's care into the budget, and still not even providing safe care for all the others that they were billing for.
Carey recommends reform for the entire system, including mandatory certification for people employed as caregivers. In a related matter, the New York State Comptroller's Office has released another in a series of audits uncovering serious problems and potential for fraud within the state's preschool special education program, especially in funding oversight. Mark Johnson is spokesman for Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli.
The audit released today found that the state education department has not conducted any on-site audits of special education providers since 2007 and has no process to routinely review the hundreds of millions of dollars charged by these private providers annually. Now, Comptroller DiNapoli's office has uncovered widespread fraud and abuse by some contractors providing services to children with physical learning and developmental disabilities, and this abuse has occurred largely because of lax oversight by the state education department.
Auditors have found numerous irregularities and instances of contractors who have cheated the system by using taxpayer funds to hire relatives at excessive salaries and to pay for personal expenses such as vacation homes, home entertainment centers, and landscaping. In November, the state education department imposed a moratorium on approving new preschool special education programs or allowing existing ones to expand while it overhauls its vetting process. School advocacy groups argue the moratorium keeps children from getting the services they need.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
New York U.S. Senator Charles Schumer is sharpening his warning that if Congress and the House in particular does not pass the farm bill, consumers may see the price of milk double and dairy farmers lose any price stability. Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The federal farm bill expires at the end of this year, and New York's senior senator says if the House fails to act on it, farmers and consumers face a dairy cliff. If there is no action, Schumer notes that on January 1st, dairy pricing policy reverts to a 1940s-era law, which would mean steep spikes in consumer milk prices. New York Farm Bureau spokesman Steve Ammerman says the senator is reflecting what ag experts have said could potentially happen if a farm bill extension or the farm bill is not passed.
The permanent farm law was implemented in the 1940s, and then the farm bill was established that basically supplants the permanent farm law. But if no farm bill is in place, by law, we have to revert back to the original farm law. The ag law that was used in the 1940s and the formula to dictate milk prices back then really doesn't work for today's standards. So if we take all of the data that we have right now and plug it into the 1940s law, that's when you get those extremely high numbers that the senator was talking about, that milk could be tripled at the grocery store.
AgriMark dairy economist Bob Wellington says farmers are frustrated with the lack of action on the farm bill.
It's very disturbing because they're facing all the uncertainty that will be affected by the fiscal cliff, but at the same time they have the dairy cliff that is going to eliminate any kind of safety net for them and any kind of hope to have a market-balancing approach to milk pricing in this country. It's doubly disturbing for dairy farmers, particularly because we've worked for several years to get a program in place that would address their issues and save the government money. We've been able to do that, but now the congressional leaders just aren't willing to act.
If the farm bill reverts to the 1940 scenario, Bob Wellington doubts the federal government would allow the predicted consumer price spikes to happen.
In a way, it shows what the price should be to farmers. But the problem with it is, if that were to look like it was about to occur, the people who buy the products and buy the milk from dairy farmers are going to buy minimal amounts. It would probably result in chaos in the marketplace. If that price were to double, one of the things that would happen right away is that the government would begin to buy up surplus dairy products because the marketplace wouldn't want them at those prices. Suddenly, government expenditures on dairy products could reach tens and hundreds of millions of dollars. And I can't believe that Congress wouldn't act to at least stop that expense.
In the absence of the farm bill, both of New York's senators are calling on the House to temporarily restore a program that protected dairy farmers from volatile price swings. Bob Wellington says that's critical.
One of the things we've asked, and we've talked with the senator's office as well as senators in Vermont and other areas, that they need to keep the MILC program the way it was prior to this September. At the very least, they should do that. That isn't a great program moving forward, but at least it gives them a safety net, which they wouldn't have.
New York Farm Bureau spokesman Steve Ammerman says the lack of a farm bill is fueling anxiety over a potential dairy cliff.
It's hard for any farm or any business to plan ahead when you don't know what the playing field's going to be. You don't know what programs are going to be in place. You don't know if you're going to be able to grow your business. You don't know if the funds will be available to purchase equipment or seed. So they're holding back on making some big decisions for their farms until they know what's going to be ag policy in this country.
New York senators are also urging that dairy pricing reforms be kept in any final farm bill agreement.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. The health industry in upstate New York is undergoing some rapid transformations, but there's also a shortage of primary care physicians. The Innovation Trail's Sarah Harris takes a look now at a different model of primary care operating across the eastern Adirondacks.
On a Monday afternoon in December, the Moreau Family Health Center, just south of Glens Falls, is packed. The doctor is seeing patients back-to-back, and so is care coordinator Jessica Casey.
I am Jessica Casey. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm a care management coordinator for the Moreau Family Health and Fort Edward Kingsbury offices.
Hello, it's Jessica. Oh, Panna? Yeah, what's the milligrams on? Were you prescribed that when you left the hospital?
Jessica helps the patient figure out his prescriptions. She schedules an eye surgery appointment and arranges the patient's transportation by coordinating with his sister. Her job, being a link between doctor, patient, and other services, is part of a new model of primary care in the Adirondacks, still in the pilot stages. It's called a patient-centered medical home.
The idea is to not only have the doctor and patient together, but a whole team of people caring soup to nuts, doing the patient coordination, doing most of the care right in that primary care setting.
That's Dr. John Ruggie. He helped start the medical home pilot 5 years ago. There weren't enough primary care doctors in the Adirondacks, and it was hard for patients to access the basic services they needed. The hope was to keep doctors in the Adirondacks, improve patient care, and reduce healthcare costs. Health centers across Warren, Hamilton, Essex, Clinton, and Franklin counties decided to participate. Public and private insurers signed up, paying $7 per patient per month. And 3 years ago, the pilot was up and running. Dr. Tucker Slingerland, a physician at Moreau Family Health Center, says it's changed his practice.
Before I go in the room, there's a team nurse that's in there. Much of the encounter is happening before I even get in there. And then I sort of try to make the, you know, help the patient make the complicated decisions. It's forced us to define what we think quality is and, you know, what things we really think make a difference for patients.
Sherman Hurlbert is Dr. Slingerland's patient. He has chronic diabetes, pancreatitis, and asthma. He's a retired nurse and says the medical home program has helped keep him out of the hospital.
We need the encouragement from their nursing staff and the doctor themselves to stay on track. You know, you need to have a little pat on the back and say you're doing the right thing or maybe make suggestions to do something a little better.
It's not yet clear what impact the medical home pilot has had on costs for patients, but it's drastically reduced hospital readmissions and pediatric emergency room visits. And that has affected the business of hospitals. Glens Falls Hospital, Adirondack Medical Center in Saranac Lake, and CVPH in Plattsburgh have all laid off employees this past fall, in part because of lower patient volumes. Stevens Mundy is head of CVPH.
Our cost structure is built on those pediatric ER visits coming in, and they're not there anymore. We have to figure out how to retool. We shouldn't have patients just coming to the hospital because we need them to come for financial reasons. That's a wrong answer. And, you know, we want those patients to get care in an outpatient setting, and we have to adjust internally.
Advocates of the medical home say it's the way forward. Here's John Ruggie.
For this part of the Adirondacks, the medical home is health reform. This is how we're tackling it. And physicians, hospitals, communities have the opportunity to look for solutions that may work for them. We think this is the kind of approach we need here in the mountains.
I'm Sarah Harris for the Innovation Trail.
Support for the Innovation Trail comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. The Innovation Trail is a collaboration between five upstate public media outlets reporting about New York's innovation economy. You can hear more at innovationtrail.org. And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies of the program are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That number, 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1251. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Giustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength is Not for Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.